Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Today's guest is Cole DeRoche. He is a designer with a lot of different skill sets. I believe his main focus is product design these days, but he also does brand work, motion graphics, web design. Years ago, probably still, he was doing leather work. Physical, digital. He does it all. He's on the pod because he produces one of the most slickly designed newsletters I know, called Today in Design, which is exactly what it sounds like, a daily design newsletter. It's aggregation, minimal commentary, beautiful package. Cool. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for that fantastic introduction. You've done your homework. I wasn't expecting leather work to come up in today's conversation.
It's at the bottom of your Instagram, the bottom of your Tumblr.
That's yeah, you're right. It is. I can't escape it.
Yeah. So I'm curious how you actually got into design, because when I look at your LinkedIn, you initially went to university for international business, and then you got a BA in film studies. So that starts to make sense. But yeah, how did where and why do those paths branch out towards what you do today?
So I don't know. In high school, I was very math was my best subject, but I'd always been creative. And in high school, I just wanted to make lots of money. So I thought the best way to do that would be to study business and learn Chinese. And yeah, first year university was going well. But then accounting came up and I just couldn't reconcile how you categorize things, which I've been exposed to it now and it makes a lot more sense, but it was a real hurdle for me to wrap my head around it. And then I just didn't go to class. And the irony is my dad's an accountant. So I ended up switching courses and taking a little bit of a break just to figure out what I wanted to do. I had always loved film, loved movies. It was the one thing I knew the most about and was always spending time either watching or learning about. And so figured just, I was going to go back and wanted to get something, some sort of piece of paper. And so went back for film studies. And nice. Yeah, it was kind of close to the end of that. I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it. So in terms of how I came onto design, I was coming to the end of film studies. I wasn't sure what I was going to do to sort of make money with it, but I kind of wanted to work in film and was exploring this sort of acting thing. And then came across design as being the super flexible thing that I could do if I needed to go to auditions and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is totally random. I haven't thought about this in a long time.
That's why we do
this. But yeah, and so I had always drawn as a kid. I had always done stuff. Some friends' baseball teams needed a logo for their jersey. So I did that. Mm-hmm. And so I started to really enjoy that process of sitting down with them, understanding what their sort of goals or what they were trying to emulate were, and then coming up with drafts. And so, I pirated an Adobe Creative Suite.
Probably 100%, maybe 99% of designers, that's how they got pirated Adobe in the 2000s.
Totally. 100%. I would not be here if I didn't torrent. So
yeah.
I did that and then went on Envato for Tuts Plus and just ran through tutorials and picked up some odd jobs on Craigslist. My first job was a $250 paying gig, and I had to design 50 dress templates for this startup out of Montreal here in Canada. Super
That's
random.
Amazing.
But, so that kind of got me interested in it. And then I got into a digital design program in Vancouver before I graduated my undergrad. And from there, it was a condensed program where you do motion graphics, web design, app design, branding, all sorts of things to sort of give you a taste of what you might be interested in. And then it all culminates around this big grad project where you choose a discipline and you come up with an idea. And so I had this idea to create a Nike Fuel Band for dogs. And so it was super fun. I went through the full process of research to concepting and modeling in 3D and creating promotional material. And then that project just ended up getting really well received. And I landed a job right after at a startup in Vancouver.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was kind of Unbounce, right?
That was at Unbounce, correct?
Yeah. It's funny that you like had all these different things going on and like all these different paths and experiments that kind of coalesced to where you are now. Because when I was researching you and like looking back, both at the newsletter and then, like I said, looking at your Tumblr, your Instagram, there's these really distinct like aesthetic chapters that I think, you know, overarchingly like all make sense together. But like there's these moments, and like I think a hallmark of a good designer is that they're really opinionated, right? Because you need to like make the decisions, like not do everything at once. You need to like have these limits. So I don't know, like that's not something everybody has, and plenty of good designers don't have that. But I really admire people who like are really good at like locking in and having that point of view. Is this something you like consciously develop? I don't know. Like, where does that come from?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if I look back at all those things you mentioned, like there's a lot of artistic expression in that aside from just design. And so like a lot of it was just for me of things that I thought were cool, and like hopefully other people think they're cool too. And then yeah, some of that was more design, where I'm thinking about a broader audience, not just myself, more objectively. And so yeah, I think it's definitely developed. But I remember like the first things I was designing at design school, and they were like embarrassing bad.
Well, they have to be.
There's this like delta between you can have good taste, but you might not have the skill set or expertise to sort of realize that level of taste. And so like, I think back to those days, and like, I was super proud of the stuff that I was making, but if I let it sit for a couple of weeks and came back to it, I would be like, this is awful.
Yeah,
like,
it was really moldy. Nowhere. You let it sit.
Yeah. Yeah. I would look at like other peers in my class of what they were doing, and just like, I see, you know, how much more I had to do to really come out with a polished product. And so, yeah, I think that's part of it. And I like knowing the tools, I do think is super helpful, because you can get lost in that flow state, and you're not like stuck trying to figure things out. Like you can more easily bring your idea into pixels or reality. I don't know.
That makes sense. I think that like, I don't know, that like the delta between taste and execution is like one of the hardest things, and can be so discouraging. Like I know for me, like, you know, like in my early 20s, when I was like trying to write, I couldn't make myself do it, because I was just stuck on like, it was that fear of failure and that like need for the first draft to be perfect and stuff. But I don't know, it's such like a universal creative, like, I don't know, just like self struggle.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So let's get into the newsletter for a little while. To describe it for anybody listening who hasn't read it before, it's like the structure of it as it exists today. It comes every morning on weekdays. It's pretty tight and slick. Like I'd kind of describe it as like a design news espresso. Like you can just drink it like in like 30 seconds. Or you can, you know, kind of linger and like click the links. And so the sections, there's like a few linked news items at the top. A couple events, maybe online events, whatever. A few links to other articles that might be less newsy, a few more like resource oriented links, and then a few GIFs or images, usually GIFs, GIFs for the if you're cultured, of design details, little like things from some product launch, or you know, little details you found that you really like. And that's it. There's not really any commentary. There used to be a little more, but these days it's usually just a single sentence as the caption beneath each of the your likes at the end. So does that, this like design news espresso, does that resonate with you?
Yeah, that sounds great. sounds delicious. I love coffee. But no, yeah, you kind of nailed it. And that's good to hear that is coming through.
Yeah. Okay, so the stats on it, you share these publicly on the sponsor page on the website. So I wrote these down. I wonder if they're still up to date. You said you had 4,500 plus subscribers, a 60.1% open rate, and a 19.1% click rate. This is current.
So all time is just below 5,000. So I'm
five away from 5,000. Wow. By the time this comes out, you'll be past it.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Open rate is 60.2 and click rate is 18.2.
Nice. Wow. That's all time. That's really good for like all time. And so the first one was on August 15th, 2023, right?
I believe so, yes. Mm-hmm. And why I say that is, and we can get more into this, but I...
Imperfect first drafts.
Yeah, I published a couple privately just to prove to myself that I could do it.
Yes.
Before signing up publicly to, hey, I'm doing this thing every day.
Which is totally the way to do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I approached this very differently than I approached past projects. So.
Okay. Well, what do you mean by that?
So in the past, like leatherwork is one thing, and that was pretty successful for what it was.
Was that like just you doing it for you, or did you have like a brand you'd started? What was the deal?
I was just selling through Instagram. People would DM me, and I would mail them baseballs or bags or belts or wallets, like all sorts of things.
So, yeah.
But that really taught me I didn't want to be in a business where it stops when my hands stop, which is really counter to running a daily newsletter because that is kind of what I'm doing. But in the past when I had these side projects or businesses, I would go all in on getting the branding right and getting the design right. And I'd hold it so close to my chest until I could sort of realize that vision that I had in my mind, until I felt proud enough to share it, which can lead to it leads you to not want to share it even longer because you've just spent so much time and it's so personal. And so I had a number of projects just like die because either the momentum was lost after I went on vacation for a couple weeks and I didn't have any like outside accountability keeping me working on it.
Yeah.
Or I would go to launch it and I didn't have any network or audience to like share it with. And I hadn't done any marketing or anything like that. So with Today in Design, I wanted to sort of build in consistency. And that's why I chose to do it every weekday, to sort of build that habit. I didn't even have like a brand or anything aside from the name. And so I chose like just an inbox icon for the logo for the longest time. Again, just to get it out there and see if it even resonated with people before I go and spend all of that time and energy.
Yeah.
And it might not even be something that people want.
Yeah, you did that for the first 4 months. I looked, it was if like the first one was around August 15th, the last time you used that logo was December 18th.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, so exactly. And like still, you know, I came up with a new logo and stuff, but I'm always in the back of my mind, like, is this the right thing? Like, but I don't have a ton of time to work on it. So it's not like my priority. It's kind of off the side of my desk. So
you do a lot really and you're balancing. A father.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's kind of just balancing what the priorities are. And unfortunately, a lot of the time, if we're going to call this newsletter a business, which I personally don't feel it is, I think it's more of a hobby right now. I'm spending a lot of time working in the business and not on the business. Nature of life and priorities. So.
Okay, there's a lot of things I want to get into there. But first, I do want to talk more about like the early design iterations and how it's evolved. I think there's like kind of two, maybe three major like chapters of the design of this newsletter and like the concept of it. When I was looking back at the earliest ones from a year ago, they're like, again, you had the inbox logo as the logo. The title or subject line, I think, was just the day's date. You had a brief intro note most of the time. Like, there was a little more of your voice in it. Like, it's all your voice, but in terms of like actual words, you know, your commentary. You still had like basically all the same sections, a little different maybe. It was a little less like tightly designed. It was just one column. It wasn't like these little like broken up columns. I think that maybe the feature wasn't out yet in Beehive. And then the V2 I kind of mark is coming after you change the logo at the end of last year, where you start using this collage of all the images from the day's news and the cover. You use the one of the headlines from the day's news as the subject line. And now you've got the new animated logo that's like just kind of the text today dot in in design, or today in dot design, excuse me. And then if there's a V3, I think it's more like, it's really like, that's the major change is like around then. But then there's one detail that I really liked when I started subscribing to the newsletter, and you got rid of, which is your green light, yellow light, slow news day, fast news day. So for anyone listening who's not a subscriber, every day when the newsletter would come in my inbox, there'd be a green circle emoji or a yellow circle emoji next to it. And green meant it was a fast news day. Yellow meant it was a slow news day. And you got rid of that. I forget. I think it was in March you got rid of it. Why were you doing that the whole time from the beginning? And if not, when did you start using it? And why did you stop using it?
I think I had started doing it from the very beginning. Why I stopped doing it is because it was such a nebulous thing for me to decide whether it was a fast news day or like there wasn't, you know, strict criteria that I was following. It was kind of just like a feeling. And I wasn't sure if it was like adding any value to things. It kind of came out of, you know, I felt this pressure to like come up with the exact same number of things every day. Mm. So 3 news articles, 2 events, et cetera. And some days I wouldn't be able to do that. So I thought that could help communicate that there's just not enough stuff that I thought was relevant enough to share.
Communicate your guilt for not fulfilling the promise to your subscribers.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think I ultimately got rid of it in that like most recent iteration because I was just trying to strip out the unnecessary and really kind of focus it a bit more and group things a bit better and provide some clear distinction between things and like style different links differently. So if you're scrolling through, like there's a bit more distinction between things and you know where you are. But yeah, I got rid of that. And at the same time I was doing like today in history. So I would try and find something in design history that was happening. And that just felt like I was stretching sometimes, like just finding things that were like design adjacent and like shoehorning into this thing.
Everything's design.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So that was kind of the decision making. And then also just trying to like really optimize how long it takes me to get an issue out. And
which is kind of the most important thing, right?
Yeah, totally. Especially just with where I'm at with it right now. If I could shave off 10 minutes a day of trying to find a relevant history and design and, you know, write up a little blurb about it, then great. I can spend that elsewhere. So that was kind of thinking. And then the last thing, which you just reminded me of, is I share these like bento videos on social.
Yes.
And those were being received really well, but I felt there was a real disconnect between that visual language and what was in the newsletter. So I really wanted to sort of tie those two things together.
Mm, which I really like those videos. They're like, again, to anybody listening to like visualize it, it's just like a box of an image, you know, usually a horizontally formatted, landscape formatted. And it's just like, 6 or so different things, like the sizes will change. It's really dynamic and it's fun. It's fun to look at, which I think describes the entire concept of the newsletter. Is the reason you stopped adding commentary also just like time? Like my impression is that the reason the newsletter looks like it is today is because you were like, why am I trying to do these things? Because like, I think this is what a newsletter is supposed to be. So I'm going to put in these things that like end up just taking up your time. And you're like, why am I doing this? So that's why it is this like, kind of lean this espresso now, where it used to be more of like a cortado.
Yeah, certainly. I look at it as, and why I tried to simplify it too, the same reason is that I wanted it to be a sort of blank vehicle for the type of stuff that I was sharing. Like, I didn't want it to influence
it's not about
as
you.
Much. Yeah, it's not about me. The whole point is to share what other people in the design community are doing, whether they're writing or podcasting or creating new interactions. And so that was kind of the main motivation behind it, is just to really put the focus on the content and not about me. Like, of course, selfishly for my own personal brand, like it is published by me and I want it coming from me and everything. And so I still wanted to provide my thoughts as to why I chose certain designs in that inspiration section of like, mm-hmm. what were the elements that popped out to me? And then also act as like a journal for me to keep track of like what's trending in design. And
but you like don't need to actually write the commentary for like to still accomplish these things you're describing, because it's still like just you putting it together. So like you, I guess you kind of like realize that over time, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. So I think with
your point, yes, time was ultimately the deciding factor of it.
Yeah. I think with aggregation newsletters, there are so many, right? I mean, Morning Brew is kind of, you know, the newsletter that launched 10,000 newsletters. And I think a lot of people look at that and they have original reporting, et cetera, but like aggregation is just such an easy way in. And like, that's kind of how people think of the newsletter format still quite often. And so I think there's a lot of people who try to aggregate without a point of view or like a distinguishing factor, other than it's just like, these are the things I look at, and so I'm going to give them to you, which can be very interesting and valid when the person has a really good point of view. But again, this is kind of a long way of saying, like, I like yours because it's really well packaged and like feels more intentional, even though it is like ultimately just like a really nice template you built that like splits it up in a different way than like a bulleted list of links. But my question is, how are you sourcing the content? Like, what is your consumption habit that filters down into this newsletter, and what makes it in versus what do you leave out?
The process has changed since I started it. Again, I'm always trying to like win back time so I can get them out quicker, but still maintain some level of quality. So now what I've done is set up a feed with a bunch of like RSS feeds that I can sort of curate, and I've set them up. I use Feedly. Mm-hmm. And so through there, you know, you can set up podcasts, you can set up event pages, you can set up all the different article or blogs or most news sites as well. And so that has saved a lot of time of me. Whereas in the past, like I had a browser folder, a bookmark folder with like all of my news sources that I would command click through every day and like quickly scan, which was like mental looking back on it. But Feedly's like saved me a ton of time. And then TweetDeck Pro or X Pro, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I have different lists set up.
X Pro, I've heard that one.
Yeah. Lists set up with filters. And then just like the way I've set up my Twitter is like I come across things throughout the day and save them. So I basically just through spending time online will like things throughout the day. And then when I wake up the next morning and it's time to get a new issue out, I'll go through all my likes and revisit and see what I like. But the sort of selection process is like 100% my taste. Like I try to be objective in what I think is kind of trending with things or what I think would be helpful from what I see.
What does objectivity mean in the context of this though?
Yeah, I know it's difficult, but maybe it's not necessarily something that I would be super interested in because I already know what this article is about, the subject matter, or something I wish I would have known 5 years ago, and it might be helpful to a younger designer who's a subscriber to the... So just trying to keep that sort of lens on.
Yeah. Okay, wait, quick question. What is your favorite design news outlet, whether current or no longer operating, whether it's online, whether it's a print product? What's the pinnacle for you of like design news?
I don't think there was one, and that's kind of why I decided to do this. Like, Designer News was this community that was like pretty popular in 2012-ish time when I started in design. And that with Dribbble, which was the online like design community, were very different than what they are today. And so I kind of wanted to emulate that feeling of like community or like discovering new articles that, you know, me and my team used to share every morning when we would be getting ready for work. And then like the Dribbble aspect of having your design featured on the front page, like having anyone recognize your work or share it publicly without you asking them, like, is such a good feeling. And so I really wanted to sort of emulate that, to build community. And like, you know, so much, you see so much criticism, and like design Twitter can be kind of harsh at times, but you know, it's all love. And like, the more of that we have, the better it is for everyone. And so that's kind of what I've been trying to do. If I had to say like the best place, like single source to get stuff, it would be Twitter, but there's just so much noise on there that it's hard to wade through. And so like, if I can save people, you know, if they're not online or they're not on Threads or anything for a week, like I can still keep them up to date
with like the service.
I think is the most important, most relevant things that people are talking about.
Do you notice if there's any particular type of thing that gets the most clicks in the newsletter? Like whether it's like this certain section tends to get the most clicks, or if it's like anecdotally like a type of story or like a subject area that's like not necessarily bound by the sections of the newsletter?
Yeah, I'd say resources and events for the most part. Yeah, I'd say those are the two bigger ones. And then news, I think, just because of where it's placed.
Yeah. I guess I'm curious how much time you're spending every morning and like what the process is for producing each newsletter.
Yeah, so getting a newsletter out is under an hour now. And so what I was doing early days is I used to be a night owl and I'd stay up late.
Do it at night.
Sometimes till 2 in the morning. Till 2 in the morning. Like, and I loved it. You know, everyone's sleeping. It's quiet time. I can get stuff done. But I have a family now and I can't stay up till 2 in the morning, because if my son gets up at 3, then I'm screwed for the day. So, and then also like there's times where things might come up throughout the day and I might not be able to have that time at night. And so in order to build consistency, I kind of needed to switch my schedule. And so what I started doing is just getting up super early and like getting sort of Cole taken care of and get the newsletter out, have my coffee, like it's quiet, everyone else is sleeping, I can like putter around the house, unload the dishwasher, and then I'm ready for everyone. And so yeah, that's kind of been the biggest impact on my like life personally, is just like reorganizing how I produce personal stuff, because I have other obligations.
That's interesting that the newsletter is like became a forcing function in that, which I think too, like the fact that you have done it for about a year now, have you missed, I mean, you don't do it on weekends, maybe you don't do it on holidays, I'm not sure. Have you missed any days?
Yeah, 100%. And that's kind of just the way it is, you know, like there's days where, you know, we don't have childcare or something, or my son's sick, or I'm just tired and I don't have the energy in it. If I have a sponsorship set up, like I'm getting it out 100%. That's my commitment. But if I don't, then I don't really worry too much about it. I don't want it to be
that's
a
good
source of stress. Like,
does it,
like, I don't have a boss. It's like,
Well, do you, I've wondered like if you were trying to make it like every single, like I can't miss a day, have you ever had anybody help you with it? Like a guest editor?
No, I haven't. And I've thought a lot about this, and I definitely think it's possible. And I've thought about how I could sort of bring on some help. I think I need to put some more focus in sponsorships and revenue in order to justify that. But ultimately, like, it would be a shift in taste, you know, like
that's the problem.
Different than my lens. So yeah, I've certainly thought about it. And I think if I ever want to scale the thing, then I need to like figure out how to do that.
Let's talk about scale and or let's talk about monetization first. Because earlier you said like, you know, you're like, I don't know if we call this a business, it's a hobby. So in terms of monetization, I know that there's sponsorships and then you have a premium option. I would hazard a guess that like it's brought you some like freelance inquiries too, in kind of a, you know, more abstract monetization way. But with sponsorships, that you've probably, you were probably doing it before this, but one of the earlier ones I found was, in March. And this was, it was sponsored by Open Doors, a design jobs focused newsletter for junior designers. Tell me about the sponsorship program for the newsletter.
Yeah. So for the first 6 months of running the newsletter, like I was just covering costs, paying for it, just seeing, you know, not worrying too much about it. Again, it was kind of providing, to your point, indirect value.
Personal brand.
Personal brand, relationship building, inbound freelance opportunities, whatever. But yeah, I wanted to start monetizing it so I could cover costs and also think about, you know, running ads and growing it a bit more. So yeah, I didn't really know where to start. I messaged a few other newsletter creators in the space and they were super helpful, like just giving me insight of what they charged. I, you know, looked at what other people were charging with similar audience sizes. And
how big was your audience at the time, approximately?
I think I waited until it was about like 2000.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I started in February.
Okay.
Doing ads. Yeah. I wanted to keep my prices low so that they were accessible.
So what percentage of the sends of the newsletter issues are sponsored these days? Would you guess?
So to date I've done 62. And again, I started in February. Those have trailed off a little bit because I've increased my prices. So I need to sort of rethink about how I want to approach it. It's interesting doing a daily newsletter because, you know, I think most newsletters my size are charging like hundreds of dollars for a single placement in their weekly newsletter. But sending it every day, I imagine that my audience develops some sort of ad blindness where they kind of know where the ad is. They're just going to scroll past it. So as much as I might have an audience size like that and I might have a good open rate and good click rate, that is something that I'm sensitive to. So pricing is definitely something I need to revisit. But
are you structuring it on like just a flat rate, like per issue?
Yeah. So I set up like a booking flow through cal.com where people can just like click through, see which ones are available. And then it allows me to just capture all the information that I need for the sponsor. Again, just trying to optimize time as much as possible.
Yeah.
And so that's been the main thing. And then whenever I've done outbound sales to brands that I like or think would be a fit, the reception has been pretty great. And so I just, my like biggest wish I would have from the last 6 months is, you know, spend some more time reaching out to brands and starting these conversations. I've got a ton of prospects and I've started the conversations with a ton of people. It's just, I haven't had the time to follow through and get them booked. And so
it's a relationships business. Kind
of, sorry?
It's a relationships business.
Yeah, certainly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's kind of why, again, I'm not really thinking of it as a business the way I maybe should be. But again, in terms of like priority and how much I can dedicate time to, like
it's still in the like what matters is that you're having fun phase.
Exactly.
So the other thing, you do have a premium offering. It's more framed as a like buy me a coffee, though, like quite literally that's how you frame it, though it is, I think, a premium subscription once you like click through. And I understand that there are 21 supporters. Some of them, you know, gave their name, they're carved on the wall of your website. Some of them are anonymous. And judging by the number and the price, you're bringing in somewhere between like $630, $700. So that's like, it is very much buy me a coffee, probably about covering your software cost. Maybe a little less, I don't know. And then the main benefit is that they can look at the whole archive and there's no ads in the version they get, and that there's this quarterly supporter only post, which I'm very curious about that. But then also, yeah, curious too about like when you started the premium thing and why you thought that was the right time to start it.
Yeah, I wanted to frame it very much like you are just helping me cover costs. Like I can't.
Like, hey, if you like this.
Coming back to time. Yeah. I couldn't commit to like providing you some much better option. And like, I'm like embarrassed that you mentioned the quarterly or
because you haven't written one yet.
Because I haven't written one yet. And so I now have, I think, 35 premium subscribers.
Oh, nice.
But for the most part, these are people that I like have been emailing with and like have established relationships with, or were like early supporters or or, you know, I got the chance to meet at Config last month. So, yeah,
but that's awesome. That's like, it's beautiful. It's this community that people are paying to support. Like, it's like the same as like going to your, I don't know, local, having like a local soccer league and you're like all chipping in for the thing. I don't know. Not, that's like a bad metaphor, but you know what I mean? It's just like you contribute to your community, literally.
Yeah. I tried to be as transparent as possible about it. Like, the reality is this does cost me money and I do need to justify why I'm waking up at 5 a.m. to my wife every morning. So like, if you can help out a little bit, and that's also like why I kind of started doing sponsorships too, is to help justify things like, and make it a little bit easier to, you know, I'm not paying out of pocket for anything anymore. Like, covered cost plus some, I think. So yes, to date, I think through sponsors, premium subscribers, and like Beehive has boosts, I think I've just crossed over $7,000. So, which I'm happy with given the amount of time and effort that I put into it, and it's covered cost, and allowed me to start thinking about how I could use that money to grow, or, you know, potentially bring on someone to help, or pay
for like getting tools to that stage.
Yeah, exactly.
So wait, one thing I want to riff on for a second here is your embarrassment, the quarterly supporter only post. Not riffing on your embarrassment, but I'm really curious what that could be, because in my mind when I hear that, it's like, this sounds like it's like not like an aggregated post. It's like something like maybe an essay you're writing, or like it's something very different than what you're doing. So I if you're comfortable sharing, I'm really, really curious about like what kind of the vision is and the directions it could go.
Totally. The immediate thought that I had was, I love to write.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton of time to do it anymore. And so I was thinking I could do a bit more editorial style, and choose a few of the topics from the last month or last quarter and really like focus in on them. Or also identify trends. Like, one of my biggest marketing channels has been Twitter. And like, I find that times when I post about trends, whether it's like trends on websites or
trends in AI trends wearables.
Exactly. Those seem to resonate a lot. And so I think if I was to focus and still build on the, build on the brand of the newsletter and keep it within the same context, I think that would be like the number one thing I'd do.
Really compelling evolution for you personally.
Yeah, certainly. So
you did say quick there that Twitter has been an important marketing channel for you, and you've got 5 under 5,000. Where have they come from? I know like Twitter is your most active social media, so that was kind of my first guess, is they probably mostly came from Twitter. But yeah, where are these 5,000 people coming from?
Twitter's been a big one. I get a lot of organic people coming in. It's difficult because I set up a new landing page because I didn't like the design of the Beehive one.
Yeah, and yours is really nice.
Yeah. So I set that up using their API, and what I'm unable to get is like refer traffic unless I'm using UTM parameters everywhere, and
just such a hassle.
Yeah, it's such a hassle. So I've kind of lost some of that insight, and I know there's ways that I could get a bit more of that insight. Again, I just haven't had the time to.
But that means what you're saying though is it like is entirely organic, whether or not that's from your Twitter or like from people sharing it with their friends or in Slack.
Yeah, so 5,000 people is 100% organic. Wow. And the biggest driver is me been sharing those bento videos that are just like quick summary snapshots of like what you can expect in that feature. And so I built in, there's an element of like social network effects in it, in that I post this video of content, quick preview, and then the next comment is I tag like everyone that's on Twitter in that that,
like the brands post, or the individuals who made the stuff.
Yeah, so I can either lead people to their profiles to help them discover new people, or give them content to reshare on their own of like, hey, I got featured in this thing, like check it out or whatever. And so that's been huge. That has been trickling down a little bit. So I think the next thing I want to experiment from a growth standpoint is giveaways. I read your newsletter.
Maybe the Cheapskate London one.
Cheapskate London. Yeah.
And I think about it a lot.
Messaged them on the Beehive Slack group, and they were lovely. And so I think I want to do something like that. I've already lined up some giveaways with some brands. I just need to sit down and like put together what that campaign looks like and the structure and how it fits into the newsletter is like a mainstay of like every week I'm going to give away a subscription, pro subscription to a piece of software or something to people who have shared with at least one person that signed up. Basically the same model that they do.
It's such a good model. Yeah, I think it's so great. I haven't found like a better, I mean, other people do giveaways too, but like theirs is so sustainable where it's like, you know, a box of donuts or like a ticket to a concert. And it makes sense because it's, you know, all in London, but.
Totally. And from a brand partner perspective, it's just more advertising for them.
Yeah, like, exactly. If you can get them to give it to you, it's really smart. Yeah, it's everybody wins. What would you say, having been doing this for a year and having evolved the concept, like from a design perspective, what would you say are some of like the core tenets or core principles of newsletter design as advice for other people? Because I think that's something a lot of people struggle with, because there's, it's like either you copy a Morning Brew format or you like try to figure out your own thing. And I just know a lot of people struggle with it. Yeah. What are some of the core principles of newsletter design?
I think I'm still trying to figure this out because email is so restrictive in like what you can do with it. Mm-hmm. And some would argue that the decisions I've made are terrible for newsletter design.
All the GIFs.
In that you GIFs. It's like dark instead of white. Like some email clients like don't love that. I think the biggest thing, and I had a nugget of an idea out of the last year, is like newsletter design agency service. Like if you can provide branding and templates and all of that stuff. And so to answer your question, I do think it is approaching it as much as you can. If you're able or have a partner or the means to hire someone, like create a brand and a visually distinct experience for your readers, because in the inbox, every email looks the exact same. It's just text. And so in my like sort of research of looking at things that have done well, like Milk Road being a crypto email, like that's a very opinionated design that works very well for them as a brand. I think what you did with Creator Spotlight, I've given you this feedback in the past, like I think it's beautifully designed. Like it looks great. The sort of consistency of that red circle emoji to like as soon as you open it up, you know exactly where you are and you know what you're getting. And so I think if you can think about it that way, that would be what I would suggest. and then visuals. Visuals are
you need that. I always think of that in terms of like visual texture, like whether it's the visuals or like the way you're making sections. It's like the way you make an email not look like every other email is giving the reader something to like just like for their eye to latch onto and like stop them from just scrolling. If it's like, you know, it's not a newspaper article where it's just text, like you need something to latch onto. Cool. I think we'll end it there. Where should people go to find your work?
Go to todayin.design to check out the newsletter. Or I'm just very active on Twitter, so definitely say hi. I love meeting new people and having chats like this.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks a lot, Francis. This was fun.
No, of course. Thank you for coming on. This has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. I have been your host, Francis Zier. And I've been speaking with Cole DeRoche. I'll see you next week.